Before we start discussing this week's parasha, Parashas Achrimos, we have to discuss, obviously, a mitzvah that is mentioned in the parasha a couple of weeks, but a mitzvah that we're all doing now, of course, Sfiras HaOmer. We know that in Parashas Emor is where we find the tzivui of Sfiras HaOmer, and there's an important yesod that I saw in Shir by Rav Yisrael Reisman, Shlita Rosh Shiva at Torah Vadas, that when we talk about the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, it tells us, "Usfartem lachem," that you shall count for yourselves. Mimachras haShabbos miyom haviyachem es Omer atnufa sheva Shabbosos tamimos tiena. That you count 7 complete weeks. So he points out that the word tamimos is a little bit strange. Very often, when the Torah wants to say a unit is complete, it refers to shlemos, that they're whole. This is page 684, 685. Why does it use the Lashon of Tamim as opposed to the Lashon of Shalem? Sure, Rabbi Reisman quoted, I believe it was from Yaakov T. Mecklenburg, the Ksava HaKabbalah, that the concept of Tamim elsewhere in Tanakh represents not just physical wholeness, but it represents an intrinsic qualitative wholeness. When you talk about inanimate objects or things like that, we talk about Shalem, right? But when we talk about a person, tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha, you should be complete with Hashem. Noach tamim haya b'dorosav, right? The concept of a tamim, ish tam yoshev oalim, is not meaning that physically he was complete. That was the antithesis of Yaakov. That was Esav, of Asui, that he was already complete. Yaakov, as opposed to Esav, who was physically complete, Yaakov was tam, he was spiritually whole. And what Rabbi Reisman...
Is tam usually like simple?
You have to wait for the who says it's simple? He might be the wholesome son. The Chacham is a little wise. Tam, some say, is the greatest of the sons. Right. So that's an interesting thing. Yeah. So, of course, we can make the argument that Mishnah Yodeh Lishol is the greatest of the sons. Okay, we're going to... Rush is the greatest of the sons. We can talk about that. Remind me before the Agada next year. We could talk about that exactly. But... the idea here that he says is that when we're counting sphere, we have to understand that this isn't just, of course, a quantitative count of 7 complete weeks. That's why the Torah used the word tamim to teach us that there's a quality to the count. Usfartim lachem, we're counting for ourselves, and each day is significant in this. And he brings down a famous question, why do we count up? Why don't we count down? Right, normally to important events is a countdown, right? The rocket launch, 10, 9, 8. They never count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Every rocket launch, 9, 10, go. No, it's always 10, 9, 8, always counting down. So what's pshat? Why do we count up? So he brings a famous idea from Rabbi Aaron Cutler in the Mishnah, Rabbi Aaron, who says that when a person, Rabbi Aaron uses a great mashal, he says, imagine you really need money, and a person says to you, in 100 days from now, I'm going to give you $1 million. Don't have it yet. In 100 days, I'm going to give you $1 million. You're going to count down to those 100 days, right? 10, you're not going to count 1, 2, 3. You're going to count 100, 99. But imagine if a person says to you, I have $1 million, but I can't give it to you once. Every day for 100 days, I'm going to give you $10,000. Right? You're not going to count down 199. You're going to count up. Day one, I got 10 grand. Day two, 20 grand. Day three, no, you hear the mashal? He says, so too, Sfiras HaOmer. We're not counting down. And it's such a beautiful idea that when we talk about Kabbalah HaTorah, it's not, again, I have to be careful how I say it, it's not only about the receiving of the Torah per se. It's not only the process, let's say, of learn. It's not only the Yediyas HaTorah, the acquisition of Torah, but it's the process that we get to the Torah. That's what we have to understand, how precious the process is. Judaism is not all or nothing. Judaism does not believe that it's only about the ends. The means are so significant as well. And that's why in Enisim, it's from the Gemara Brachos, we say, Anu amelim v'hem amelim. Anu amelim mekablim sachar, v'hem amelim v'enam mekablim sachar. When we're contrasting, basically, spiritual goals and physical, material goals. When a person is striving for a material goal, it's all or nothing. Either make the deal and you get your $1 million, or you don't make the deal and you get nothing, right? Or you get a tiny purse, tiny salary. So many of these big finance people, they don't work. The salaries are very low. I remember friends who now is retired, living in Eretz Yisrael. Won't give too many more details now that I posted Shimon Haytorah. But you know, he's retired, and he told me, he remembers. I remember when he was starting in big finance. I said, what's a salary? He goes, a salary? You'd be shocked. And this was, again, it was 20 years ago, but he said, salary? Maybe 100 grand, 150 grand. I'm like, what? He goes, the bonuses, the deals that you work on, the commissions. He says he has people that he works with live lifestyles, assuming they're going to be making about $15 million a year based on bonuses and the deals they're working on. He says, if these deals don't work out, that's why these guys, he said, all using substances to help them with the anxiety and the nerves because they're living a lifestyle, buying a new boat. Isn't that? Imagine if the deal doesn't work, doesn't close. Where are you getting the $10 million for that new boat? And it was like a pellet. But that's like, when it comes to Torah, the toiling, the process itself is part of the schar. That's why it's lasok b'torah. Rabbi Aaron Cutler said part of hamelus b'torah is driving to a shir. Driving to a shir. Remember, we mentioned this not too long ago, that you know those that listen to the shir by recording in the comfort of their home, it's good, Baruch Hashem, learning Torah. We're not minimizing that. But Rabbi Aaron said that the driving to a shir is part of the hamelus, of coming to the shir. It's part of the growth in Torah. And that's something that we have to recognize when we're engaged in this mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer, how important it is, Sfartim Lachem, that it has to be Tamimos, that every day is valuable. It's not all or nothing when it comes to Sfira. That's why I'm bothered that people get so obsessed. Are you still counting with the bracha? Oh, I can't count with the bracha anymore. First of all, it's still a mitzvah even without the bracha. Okay? It's still a mitzvah even without a bracha. And to me, it's mamish, the antithesis of what Sfira is all about. Because Sfira is about every day is valuable. That's why some say Sfira is a lashon of a sapir, a sapphire stone, a precious each day. Each day of Sfira is so precious and so valuable, and yet people have this fixation, oh, I'm out, I'm not counting with a brach anymore. And then they just forget counting, they forget it's Sfira, like, hello, every day is meaningful, okay? In one, Judaism believes, you know, Sheva Yipal HaTzadik V'Kamlo, but Sfira, one miss, and that's it, you're done. You know, so you should take pride if you're not counting with a bracha anymore, right? I am, but I'm not just saying this to make myself feel good, because I missed them. Although there are tshuvas that rabbis that have to count publicly, even if they miss a day, they're allowed to count with a bracha. Otherwise, too embarrassing, maybe rabbi lose a job. I haven't relied on that since I'm a rabbi here, okay? But this is an important yesod. Tamim, svartam lechem sheva shabbosos tamimos tiyana, that our counting should be tamim. It's qualitative. It's not merely quantitative. Usfartim lachem. It's as Rabbi Cutler said, every day we're getting $10,000. It's not that we're waiting to get the $1 million, but it's the toiling each and every day. It's the counting each and every day that's so incredibly valuable. So that's one idea about Sfira to set the tone for our learning. And then when we come to our learning, of course, Parshas Achrimos, pages 636, 637, right away we're confronted with Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we made many connections between Pesach and Yom Kippur, opportunities of tshuva, time to begin again, new creation, and lo and behold, the Shabbos right after Pesach, in Eretz Yisrael's Mamish Samud, it was right next to Pesach, literally. You went from Pesach into Shabbos, Parshas Achrimos, is a Bechina of Yom Kippur. We know that the Kriya is Me'ora the Zman, that when you read something from the Torah, you can connect to it spiritually. So we're connecting to Yom Kippur here, spiritually. However, I don't want to get into the Yom Kippur aspect, but the aspect of the very first Pasuk in this week's Parsha, with a very troubling Rashi. Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe acharei Moshnei b'nei Aharon v'karvasam lefnei Adonai v'yamusu. And Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of Aaron's two sons, v'karvasam lefnei Hashem, when they came close in front of God, v'yamusu, and they died. The next pasuk says, vayomer Adonai el Moshe daber al Aaron achicha v'al yavo b'chaleis el ha-kodesh mi-beis l'paroches al p'nei ha-kapores asher al Aaron v'lo yamus ki be'anon e-ra'el ha-kapores. And Hashem says to Moshe, speak to Aaron, your brother. He cannot come into the Kodesh Kodashim whenever he wants. It has to be under very unique circumstances with certain prerequisites. So you look in Rashi right here. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe achri Moshe nebinai Aaron matam lomer. What's the pasuk saying? So right away, you think, what does he mean? What is the pasuk talking about? Why does it have to mention the death of Aaron's two sons? But in fact, if you look, Svarim Acherim, Rashi has a bracket, the article does very well, it brings down the other nusach, and some say this is the more authentic nusach from the Medrash that Rashi is in fact quoting, the Torah's Kohanim, that it said, Ein anu yodim manemar lo bedibur rishon. Now this means something else entirely. What does this mean? What's bothering Rashi is not necessarily Achrei Moshe b'nei Aaron. What's bothering Rashi is the first pasuk starts, Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of Aaron's two sons when they came close to God dying. And the next pasuk says, what? And Hashem said to Moshe, speak to Aaron. What's the Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe in the first pasuk talking about? What was said in the first Dibur? You see, the two nuschos, the two different versions of Rashi's questions can mean very different things, although even the Matalman Lomar, what's the pasuk talking about, meaning the proper text from the Torah's Kohanim, that's what most point out, that the proper text is in the brackets. That's probably why the art scroll brings it. Maybe is Megala reveals to us what Rashi really means in the Matalman Lomar, that it's not necessarily what Achrei Moshe b'nei Aaron is doing here, but what did God say to Moshe? Right? You see the question? It's important to recognize. It starts Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, and the next pasuk Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Daber al Aaron. This is what you tell Aaron. What did he tell him in the first pasuk? So Haya Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Moshlo Mashal. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gives us an example. He explains what was said in the first pasuk by way of a metaphor. L'chol shenichnas etzel rofe. An ill person who goes into a doctor. Amar lo, the doctor tells him, Al tochel tzonin v'al tishkav betachav. Don't eat cold foods, don't sleep in a cold, damp place. Ba'achar v'amar lo, then another doctor comes and tells him, Al tochel tzonin, don't eat cold foods, v'al tishkav betachav, don't sleep in a cold, damp place. Shalo tamos kederach shemes ploni. So you won't die like this other guy dies. Ze zerzu yoshem in arishon. That one, this one, creates a certain alarmingness, if you will, a certain focus more than the first one. Right? L'kach nemer achrei Moshe b'nei Aaron v'yomer Hashem Moshe daber al Aaron achicha v'yavo shelo yomus kederach shemesu banov. That really, what the two vayidaber, what the two lashonos of Dibur and Amira telling us, is that almost as if it was said twice to Aaron. The first, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, tell Aaron, and then, Achri Moshe b'nei Aaron, because of some of the Hashem, Vayomus, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Daber al Aaron Achicha. The two Daber is teaching us that the tzivu here was given with extra umph. You know, what Rashi seems to be saying is that it was given twice, the second time with the extra umph. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is teaching us. The question here is obviously a very troubling one. What's a troubling question? What's a troubling question? Aaron HaKohen needs to be reminded in such a way? He needs to be warned? We're talking about Aaron HaKohen, right? We're not talking about Joe Schmo Cohen. We're talking about Aaron HaKohen. A tzaddik, incredible, only overshadowed by the greatest prophet of all time. The one who was with God day and night for 120 days without eating, without drinking, without sleeping. Aaron himself was an awesome, awesome person. He needs to be warned about the holiness of the Kodesh Kodashim by reminding him about his two dead sons. What's pshat? And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's mashal, you comparing Aaron HaKohen to a chola, to a sick person that needs to be healed? That's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe points out. I mean, the first question everyone asks, like, what's pshat? Why does Aaron HaKohen need to be warned in such a stark, seemingly harsh way? This is Aaron HaKohen we're talking about. Second, the Lubavitcher Rebbe's bothered. What's the mashal? An ill person? He's telling Aaron HaKohen's a sicko? Something sick about Aaron HaKohen? He has to go to the doctor? And again, is there any significance? Don't eat cold food. Don't sleep in a damn place. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe has a beautiful, beautiful pshat. Beautiful pshat. Beautiful, beautiful pshat. That Aaron HaKohen was lovesick for God. The sickness that Aaron needed to be healed from was that he just wanted kirvas Elokim so deeply. He wanted to be close to God more than anything. And that's why, what's the warning? Achri Moshne b'nei Aaron, what? Bikarvasam lifnei Hashem vayamusu. So Rechaim HaKadosh says, the Torah is being megalit to us why they died, because they wanted bikarvasam lifnei Hashem. They're incredible, incredible Yari Shemayim. Nadav Aviyu, the Torah tells us, was on the level right under Moshe Aaron, was Nadav Aviyu. You'll see when we're talking about, go back to Shemos, talking about Kabbalah Satorah, it's Moshe Aaron, Nadav Aviyu, and then the Shivim Zakenim. Then everyone else. They were very unique, just as Moshe and Aaron unique, Nadav and Aviyu were right under them. Bikarvasam lifnei Hashem, they wanted a closeness to Hashem so intensely, that burned so deeply, vayamusu, that they stepped beyond the boundaries. And the fire, dafka fire, consumed them. Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that's why the mashal that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says talks about chola. In fact, we talk about that often. It's a metaphor and it's an image used from Shir HaShirim, that what does Shlomo HaMelech say? Ki cholos ava ani. Cholos ava, I'm sick with love for God. Right? That Aaron was sick. And why tzonein? Why tachav? Why cold food? Why a damn cold place? Because when you're burning with a fire, what do you need to do? You need to cool the person down. And that's what the concern is here. That Aaron HaKohen, the opportunity to go into the Kodesh Kadoshim, a rendezvous with God that is so unique, that is so hidden, and is so awesome, he has to understand, stepping out of line even the littlest bit can mean what? Can mean death. And just remember what happened to Nadav Aviyu. That's a reminder, because of his tshuka, his intense desire for holiness, that's why he has to be so careful. Dafka, that's why he has to be so careful. The Chidushei Halev, Rav Henoch Leibowitz, the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal, the former Rosh Hashiva of Chafetz Chaim that we've been quoting a lot this year, he says a similar yisod to Lubavitcher Rebbe from Rabbeinu Yonah, that the Rabbeinu Yonah on Chumash writes that Nadav Aviyu were mamish, like, biggest tzaddikim, and he asks, like, how could they fall? And he takes it a little bit of a different direction. It's you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe took it in the Hasidish direction, the Chidushei Halev, Rav Henoch, takes it in the Baal Musar tradition. He says, because the most dangerous Yetzihara is the Yetzihara of L'Shem Shamayim. Meaning we understand the Yetzihara of the cheeseburger, why that's bad. And why it's easy to see that Yetzihara, and easy to focus on it and to reject it, right? But the Yetzihara of L'Shem Shamayim. Yetzihara, I'm doing this for God's sake. I'm doing this to come close to Hashem. That's what this world is all about. That could lead to, that he writes, it's the most dangerous Yetzirah, the Chidushei Halev writes. That's what Nadav Aviyu fell to. That's what we're warning the Kohen Gadol to. And that's the greatest Yetzirah. And of course we know that this is something that's very appropriate for this time of year, of course. Because why is Sfira a time of sadness? The original reason. Historians point out the reason why we'll say, even though the Shabbos is Shabbos Mevorchim, and normally Shabbos Mevorchim, you don't say Avarachim, we're still going to say Avarachim in the Shabbos, because Avarachim was written as a memorial prayer for the Jews who died during the Crusades. And the overwhelming destruction of the Jewish communities in Germany and France during the time of the Crusades was during Sfira. So that's why you find Ashkenazi communities more strict about Sfira, certainly the second half of Sfira, when more of it happened actually after Lag BaOmer, Sfaradim until Lag BaOmer, many Ashkenazi communities, and Minig Elizabeth is that Sfira starts at Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Until Rosh Chodesh Iyar, no problem, because many Ashkenazi communities have that custom. Rabbi Stephen Wall from the OU, when he was here for a Shabbos, he gave a great, remember that, Rachel? He gave a great, great talk about this, explaining this, the history of it, and the significance of what happened during the Crusades. But we know that the first marking of this man as a time of mourning was, of course, the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. And what does the Gemara say about Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim? Why did they die? Lo nagu chavod zebezeh. They didn't treat each other with kavod. And I saw one very sad but very powerful pshat. Talmidim Rabbi Akiva didn't treat each other with kavod? What does this mean? You know where Rabbi Akiva was? Akiva was one of the greatest of the greats. Mamish. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Rabbi Akiva should have been the one to receive the Torah instead of me. Right? And Hashem doesn't answer Moshe, no, you're greater. Hashem says, this is what my machshava was. Right? Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest of the greats, one of the greatest human beings of all time. His students were supposed to be the leaders of the Jewish community, supposed to help the Jews post-Churban rebuild, survive, push on, optimistic. That's what Rabbi Akiva was all about. These weren't stam nachschleppers. These were talmidei Rabbi Akiva. And lo nagu chavod zeh bezeh, how could that be? Say, so long pshat, obviously, these were tzaddikim on the highest level. Any little thing that they did, you know, of course, was magnified. But I saw one chat that said, because as Talmid Rabbi Akiva, they all thought what they were doing was L'Shem Shamayim. You have to be so careful when you're dealing with this Yetzirah of L'Shem Shamayim. Because they understood what they represented, because they understood that they were the Bali HaMesorah, they took things so seriously. But unfortunately, at some point it crossed the line. And whether it was the wars of Torah or whatever it was, devolved to something personal, devolved to something where there were slights towards each other's kavod and to their sense of self, and that's where it fell apart. And, you know, unfortunately, Bavanoseinu HaRabim, it's such a painful thing. It's so painful. You know, the people that this is what they get excited by, and people have criticized me before that I don't talk about the fights in the Jewish community from the pulpit, of what's going on in this newspaper and that newspaper and this Jewish group against that Jewish group, and I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I told the people, I said, why should I get up and talk about machlokas? Why? I don't get it. If you want to know my day or what I really feel, I think most people in the shul know really what I feel about certain things, movements, this and that, and but otherwise, why do we want to talk about these fights? Why do we talk about fights? Because unfortunately, so many of these things have devolved into, you know, fights, attacks against people. In Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara tells us everything is sharper in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you know, where the camps that people divide themselves up into religiously have so many segments and thin slice so thinly, and there it's related to so many other social issues and communal issues and security and economical. I mean, it's just like unbelievable. You have to daven. You know, the bracha of Sim Shalom Tov Avracha, Chen V'Chesed Rachamim, Hamvor Chesam Yisrael Bashalom. You know, it's one time we'll have to have a shir. Why is that not a bakasha? Isn't that the greatest request of God? God, just give peace to Jewish people. Bless us with peace. And I hold that's the bracha. You have to have like the most kind. I know Shalachas is the first bracha, and then Modim, I know. But personally, sometimes I hear the news, I look on the internet a little bit, and I don't spend time trying to get the hack on these things on the internet. I think it's poison to your soul. And I'm sure that people spend all the time on internet, this hack and that hack. It's just poison. It's just not good for you, neshama. Just have the kavana, sim, shalom, tov, avracha, chen, v'chesed, v'rachamim. How important that is to be mispalel for. And that's the tikkun of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. That's the tikkun of the Talmidim, that, you know, even though we disagree, we can disagree strongly, not chas v'shalom, to let it devolve into personal attacks and, you know, to understand how important it is to be so careful when it's the Yetzihara of L'Shem Shemayim. That was the way that the Chiddush HaLev, Reb Henoch, understood what Rabbi Yonah was saying, what the Rebbe was saying at the same time. Like, what's pshat? We're nervous about a Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur. What's pshat? That we have to bring up the Mises B'nei Aaron. What's the significance of that? The Chiddush HaLev just does bring down another idea. Like, Aaron was sick. What does that mean? You know, why does Aaron need such a warning? Do you think, really, Aaron HaKohen would have stepped out of line? Okay, I understand there's a great Yitzhar, whether it's L'Shem Shemayim or Aaron HaKohen was so lovesick. Aaron HaKohen really would have gone out. So he says two very important things. One thing that we've seen before from Rav Henoch. It's a classic Baal Musar idea, where he says that there's a wide gap between, he says, the seichel and hergish, between the intellect and emotions and feelings. A huge gap between the moach, the brain, and the lev. And he says that to bring something from the moach to the lev, to bring something from the intellect to the emotions, to the feelings, you have to hit them in their feelings. It has to be something intense. You really have to use vivid imagery, right? To sometimes make a point that can enter a person's emotions and feelings. You know one thing intellectually. Okay, you hear a wonderful shiur, but then you hear the story, and the story hits the heart, right? And so often it's the story that makes the roshem, and it's not the intellectual yediyah. What affects a person, if it's so many people tell me that the stories, I say in class, in Bury, whatever, the stories really changed my life. What about the Torah wheel? Yeah, it was okay, you know. A shir is a shir, you know. But stories really, because story brings it to the heart. But listen to what Rav Henoch says. Wow. I read this and I was like shaking. He says, Aaron HaKohen, posh, he would have done what Hashem said. There was no chashash. Even if it was only in his moach, even if it was only in his seichel, Aaron HaKohen would have been fine. But you know what the problem is? If it's not a hergish, it doesn't get into your lave, Aaron HaKohen might not have done anything different. But your children and your students pick up on it. And if it's not given over with the hergish, if it's not from the lave, then by definition, you can have watering down to the next generation. If it's not in the lave, if it's not a hergish, if it's not a feeling. And that's something that I struggle with, the idea that it has to be something that goes in. And that's why Rav Henoch, he points out, is a great Baal Musar, of course, why you have to learn Musar every day. And Musar is not intellectual knowledge. We've said this so many times. Musar is emotional knowledge. Musar means bringing an idea and planting it in your heart. It's not reading the Mesillas Yesharim saying it's a great sefer. It's reading the Mesillas Yesharim over and over and over to go from the seichel into hergish, to go from the moach into the lev. And it has to be vivid. Rabbi Shaul Salanter writes in one of his famous letters, it's in Or Yisrael, it has to be sfasayim dolkos be'esh, your lips have to be on fire. You have to be reading it with emotion, to be ma'orer the hergish, to be ma'orer the feelings, that it can go in and meditate on it. And that's why the Bali Musar, so often, they talk about just saying the same thing over and over and using that vivid imagery, right? One of the most intense statements, I think, in Tanaitic literature that we find, a very graphic statement, is Akadya b'mahalal omer, right? When you talk about Pirkei Avos, the beginning of the third parak, Akadya b'mahalal omer, sakel b'shlosh dvarm ve'inata bali de'chet. Think about three things, you won't come to sin. And what's interesting is it Rabbi Gamliel said, Rabbi said the same thing. Think about three things, you won't come to sin. Rebbe says, what is it? An eye that sees, an ear that hears, and all your deeds are written in a book. So you hear that, that's a little scary, right? But then you have Akavi v'mahal omer. And what does he say? Histalkel b'shol shedvarm v'enata boli d'chet. Me'ayin basa, lana taholech, v'lefnei mi'ata asa din v'cheshben. Me'ayin basa, where do you come from? A putrid drop of semen. Where are you going to? To a place of worms and maggots. And in front of whom you're giving a din v'cheshben? In front of the king of all kings. Now, which one is more intense? Which one makes its mark? You know what I'm saying? Not putting down Rabbi Yudanasi, Chas v'Sholom. And Ikav Mahal was a very strong personality. He was actually put in Cherim because he refused to back down from Meshifta. He was a very strong personality, Ikav Mahal. Not say Rabbi Yudanasi wasn't. Okay. But, you know, when you have these two statements, they're both saying, think about three things and you won't come to sin. But which one hits you more? No? I know which one hits me more. I know which is the one that a certain time in my life, you know, I'd meditate on that saying over and over. Just meditate in a quiet room, nothing else. And that was my Musar Seder. For 5 to 10 minutes a day, just to go over it and to say it and to say it and imagine it. And you bring yourself to tears. You know, you can't get wrapped up in it. You could become depressed and it could be morose. And, you know, you have to do something very fun after, like go to Carvel, right? Something to bring you joy after, because that could like be a big down. When you're Shiva, you know, you're so happy anyway, learning all day, right? So, you know, but the idea that that's what Reb Henoch says, that's why they tell Aaron HaKohen, don't do what your two sons did. Aaron knew it, but Hashem said it has to go in here. And not for Aaron, but Elazar and Isamar should see what it is. The Zakenim should see what it is. How you tzitter going into the Kodesh Kadoshim then. Because if it's intellect, it's one thing, but when it's in your heart, they're going to take it differently. You hear it? Mm-hmm. Such a powerful idea. I remember when I was preparing this, I was like, wow. Wow, Leah's like, what? She said, then don't tell me. I just want to listen to it. I'll listen to it. I'll be surprised. I'll listen to it. So this is a wow. This mamish, like, took my breath away when I was preparing this. Mamish. Such an intense vart from Rav Henoch. Such a beautiful vart. And it's so late. We'll end with one brief idea. Mamish, give me 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Nice idea. Bring us back to the surface. Bring us a little bit simcha. It's a beautiful idea from the Rav, quoting the Netziv. The Rav, so we won't get through that vart. Okay, there's a lot of beautiful Torahs, but we're leaving a couple of things on the table next year for Parshas Acharemos. But on this page, the second, fourth pasuk, Sonas Bat Kodesh Yolbash, talking about the special begadim that Aaron wears into the Holy of Holies, the special white linen garments. Sonas Bat Kodesh Yolbash, the tunic of linen he'll wear, Michnas Evadyu, Al Bisaro, the pants, like the boxers, Abavnet Bad Yachgor, the linen belt, Mitzefes Bad Yitznof, the linen hat, special turban, big day kodesh heim, they're all holy garments, and he washes his flesh in water and dresses them. If you look at the pasuk, though, they're all big day kodesh, but only one, when it lists it, says it call it kodesh. Right? It doesn't say the holy hat. It doesn't say the holy belt. The gartel is a very holy thing. I'd say the gartel, the Kohen Gadol should say holy. It doesn't say that. The undergarment, that acts as a hafrada. But it says the ksan is bad kodesh. The holy robe. Why is the robe holier than the hat? Why is the robe holier than the belt, the sash? Again, if you're chassidish, the gartel should be the holiest, right? You're yeshivish, the hat should be the holiest, right? My son Yossi's birthday is the day after Pesach in Chutz Laaretz, so he already likes to walk around my house wearing my hats. And he's like, Abba, are you going to get me a hat like this? I said, do you know how expensive that hat is? There's no chance I'm getting a hat like that. He goes, oh, okay. Give me a hat a little less expensive than that? Maybe, we'll talk about it. The holy hat, the hat's very holy. But the cloak, why is the cloak the holy? You hear the question? Mm-hmm. He says the cloak. So I want to read you in a tziv. The Rav, in the Rav Chumash, it quotes this in tziv, but I want to quote it to you straight. So he says that before you wear the ksones, you have to put on the Michnasei Vad, but it mentions the Ksones because of its Kedusha, unique Kedusha, more than all the other garments. Why? Because he says it's like a Sefer Torah. What? Which is holier, Mezuzah or Tefillin? Tefillin. Which is holier, Tefillin or Sefer Torah? Sefer Torah. Why? Why? Because Tefillin has more Parshios than a Mezuzah. A Sefer Torah is more Parshios than Tefillin. So Sefer Kodesh, so Sefer Torah is the most holy. Hachanami, the Netziv writes, Lefi ribui ha'evarim ha'mislabshim ba'avoda. Whichever garment covers the most parts of the body of the Kohen Gadol that does the avoda, ribui kiddushoso, it's holier. Is that a beautiful idea? The Rav has a whole piece. He wrote an art. It was a speech that was given in Yiddish, was translated into Hebrew. Yehudi mashul Sefer Torah. That a Jew is like a Sefer Torah. And maybe that's why the Rav quoted it in his speech, this idea from the Netziv. But the Netziv saying is so beautiful. And the truth is, Anche Kodesh Tiyun Li, Mamlechas Kohen and Vigoy Kodesh, we're all like Kohen Gadols. Right? We're all involved, all of our Varim are involved in Kmilei de Kedusha, in matters of holiness. But what the Netziv is saying is so geschmack, so beautiful. That a Sefer Torah is the holiest because it has the most parshios, the most holiness in it. So the ksones, the coat, the tunic, the robe of the Kohen Gadol is the holiest because it covers most parts of the body that are involved in mitzvah, most parts of the body that are involved in avodah. So it's like such a beautiful idea that the clothing, that which may, that we in our bodies, we have the ability to transform things into holiness in terms of mitzvahs. And that's why the Rav does say later on in Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Hey, this much should be a bigger discussion, but I'll regal achas mamish. The Torah says, V'chai bohem. We should live by Torah and live doing mitzvahs. Halacha is, this is one of the greatest mitzvahs in the whole Torah, because how do I know it's one of the greatest mitzvahs in the whole Torah? A mitzvah to live. How do I know it's one of the greatest mitzvahs in the whole Torah? Because this mitzvah to live overrides every mitzvah except for three, right? Except for Avodah Zarah, Gila Rai, Shvi Chazdamim, Shabbos versus V'chai Bohem, V'chai Bohem wins. Eating on Yom Kippur and V'chai Bohem wins. Eating Chametz on Pesach and V'chai Bohem wins. Right? Maybe that's why Elisa's not here, because she would deny that it's true. Right, Elisa? You can listen to the recording. Say, no, Chametz on Pesach comes before V'chai Bohem. But it's like an amazing thing. And the Rav says, why is it so important? Because he says, you see how Judaism values life and how sanctified and how amazing human life is. How important it is to be alive and to live. And the value that Judaism places on human life is like unmatched in other religions that aren't hedonistic, self-worshipping religions. I mean, it's an amazing thing how Judaism sees a great value in our life. And the clothing that we wear can be holy based on how we use it in mitzvahs. It's an amazing idea, beautiful, beautiful idea. After that intense Rav Henoch, just end on something that's a little nicer, sweeter. Goes down easier, yeah, maybe a little. Just goes down a little bit easier, this idea. But I'm sorry, I apologize. If I'm waiting for you, don't have time to be in the Sakeim. But again, the difficulty in Mesfartim Lachem, why are we counting up? Because each day we're getting those $10,000. Sfira, make each day is meaningful. Don't get caught in the all or nothing. Oh, I'm not counting the bracha, so it's done. No, chas v'shalom. But also the difficulty in the first Rashi. What exactly bothers Rashi? What's the mashal of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? How is Aaron HaKohen sick? Why do we have to use such intense imagery? The danger of the Yitzhar L'Shem Shemayim, the beauty of being lovesick for God, but the little danger that there can be there with that, connecting the Rabbi and the Chidush Elev saying the importance of going from Seichel, Targish, from the intellect to the emotions, and doing that and with vivid imagery, and doing that with sometimes intense examples, and although it doesn't necessarily impinge on our performance, but children, students, they get the hergish. They get what's in the lave, not necessarily what's in the seichel, and the beauty of the holy tunic, and v'chai b'hem, the importance of living in Judaism. Shkoyach, shkoyach.